A native of central Illinois, Sandra Steingraber is an ecologist who is deeply interested in cancer and the environment. Her interest is both scholarly and personal. 30 years ago, when she was a 20-year-old college student, she was diagnosed with bladder cancer. And cancer has afflicted many members of her family. Her mother is a breast cancer survivor. An aunt died of bladder cancer, and she has uncles with colon cancer, stromal cancer, and prostate cancer. She says sometimes when she begins to tell people about this, she can almost hear them thinking she's from one of those cancer families. But here's the rub. She's adopted. Sandra Steingraber is the author of Living Downstream, an ecologist's personal investigation of cancer and the environment. First published in 1997, is now available in a second edition from DeCapo Press. The second edition has been published to coincide with the release of a documentary based on the book. The documentary, also titled Living Downstream, will be screened in 5 Illinois cities this month. The first screening is set for this Saturday evening, October 16th at 7 o'clock at the Art Theater in downtown Champaign. A question and answer session will follow with the author and the filmmaker. And it's my pleasure this afternoon to welcome Sandra Steingraber to our program. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Nice to be here.
Nice to talk with you. When people hear about the cancers that have affected your family and then learn you're adopted, how do they respond?
I see a lot of blinking. It's as though it doesn't compute for folks. I think there's a lot of presumption that what runs in families must necessarily run in genes. And I became interested as a biologist and as a cancer survivor and as an adopted person in understanding what else families have in common. And, of course, that includes our environment. So that became the place for me to begin this project, Living Downstream.
Yeah. You learned 30 years ago that bladder cancer is a cancer with links to exposure to toxic chemicals. What are these chemicals, and how had you come in contact with them in central Illinois?
Bladder cancer is considered a kind of quintessential environmental cancer, and so when I woke up from anesthesia in 1979, I'm now 51 years old, so this is quite a long time ago, my doctors had some questions for me, and one of them was, had I ever smelted aluminum? Had I ever vulcanized tires or dealt with textile dyes? And you can imagine those are really surreal questions when you're under anesthesia and when you're a high-achieving, you know, Elks Club winner of the scholarship to study biology. Of course I wasn't out smelting aluminum. But in fact, I found out that bladder carcinogens are well described. Some of them have been known since the 19th century, and yet, even though we have absolute proof about their ability to cause bladder cancer, we've never eliminated them from our economy. So I began gathering string on this as a young biologist, but it wasn't until my mid-30s, with the help of a postdoc at Harvard, that I ended up moving back into my sister's basement in Tazewell County, Illinois, and became a kind of environmental detective there. Indeed, I did discover there were chemical contaminants in my hometown drinking water wells, and those include chlorinated byproducts from water chlorination as well as dry cleaning fluids.
How many other cancers may be attributed to chemical exposure in the environment?
Well, I try to come to terms with that in the book Living Downstream, and some cancers have more deeper ecological roots than others. And the President's Cancer Panel most recently took a crack at this. In their most recent report, this is a panel that comes out of our National Cancer Institute and contributed this report to President Obama, and they also concluded that the burden of human cancers triggered by the environment has been grievously underestimated and really needs to become a national priority. And they specifically singled out, as do I in my book, pediatric cancers. So cancers among children have evidence linking them to especially pesticides. And, of course, children who are 3 and 4 years old don't smoke, drink, or hold stressful jobs. So the usual explanations we invoke for adults don't usually apply to them. And we don't know of any inherited factors that would trigger this.
Yeah. You report that there is an emerging awareness of the importance of epigenetics. I found this very interesting. And to illustrate what that is, you write about identical twins. Would you talk a bit about that?
Sure. Well, I think of identical twins as kind of a mirror image opposite of adopted people, in that here is a family made up of people who are absolutely identical genetically to each other. And yet, as identical twins age, they become more and more unalike. Their genetic activity starts to resemble each other less and less. And if twins move into different environments and live life apart from each other, that happens more rapidly. Their genes begin to look more and more different from each other. So I've often wondered as an adopted person if there might not be some converse process that happens. For example, my sister and me, who are not related by chromosomes, did we experience some kind of genetic conversion? Did our genes start to resemble each other more and more as we inhabited the same environment? And is that why we had the same allergies and wear the same eyeglass prescription, for example, even though there's no underlying genetic explanation for that? Is that why my aunt and I both developed the same kind of bladder cancer? And so I think what epigenetics really shows us, and it's a brand new field of study, it's only about a decade old or so, but it shows us the way in which our genes and our environment really are two dancers in an elaborate dance. And our genes are expressed based on the kind of signals they receive from the environment. So rather than think of our genes as kind of these inherited set of teacups, you know, that we get from our ancestors that are sort of safely locked away in a cellular china cabinet, I invite readers to consider our genes more like the keys on a piano. It's really the environment that is the musician. So it's the same, you know, 88 keys, but you can play jazz or you can play Mozart, but it's the environment that is playing the keys.
Yeah, and it's so complex because you have environment and you have genetic makeup and you have lifestyle.
That's right. It's a kind of triangle of causation. Genetics and lifestyle heretofore, I think, have received the lion's share of attention and research dollars. So my attempt really in both the book and the film is to kind of be a corrective to that and shine the spotlight on the role the environment is playing.
Yeah. Would you tell us something about the documentary made by Chandra Chavanas?
Yes, I'm so thrilled with it. Chandra has a very cinematic approach to the material, and I think really has captured both the loveliness of the Illinois landscape as well as has an ability to tell the scientific story in a way I think is compelling. And, of course, I try to do the same thing in language that she has done in film. And so I'm really thrilled to bring the film to Central Illinois, where so much of it was actually made. And, you know, I've been traveling around in places like Boston and Washington, D.C. and L.A. and San Francisco with the film. And when I introduce it, I sometimes have to remind my audience members where Illinois is and what corn and soybeans are. But this time I think there'll be lots of smiles and nods. Although I think what film can do so beautifully, you know, is show us a familiar landscape in a brand new way. So I hope that even though people will actually literally recognize the places that are featured in the film, they'll see a beauty that perhaps they've never seen before. At least that's what happened to me when I saw the rough cuts for the first time.
Yeah. We have to wrap up now, and I can only give you a minute, but what would your recommendations be for reducing exposure to carcinogens in the environment?
There is no way to create a safe pod. We can't all be boys in the bubble. There's no way to keep these, you know, you can't opt out of the water cycle or the food cycle. And so protecting ourselves means protecting the environment. And in Illinois, which I think of as such a lovely place, we have some serious issues. One of them is atrazine, a chemical with troubling links to endocrine disruption and perhaps to cancer that's been banned for use in the European Union, which contaminates so much of our water in Illinois. And another is our dependency on coal, which contributes to our air, known carcinogens, and contributes to a number of different cancers, including breast cancer in women as well as lung cancer. And so I urge an upstream approach. We need to get off of fossil fuels. We need to find green chemistry and organic farming methods of solving our problems.
Chandra Steingraber, thank you very much for talking with me this afternoon.
My great pleasure. I'm looking forward. I was born in Champaign. I'm looking forward very much to coming home.
The second edition of Sandra's book, Living Downstream, is now available from DeCapo Press. A documentary film based on the book by the same name will be screened in five Illinois cities this month, including in downtown Champaign at the Art Theater this Saturday evening at 7. A question and answer session will follow. For more information, including a link to Sandra's blog and a schedule of the film's screenings, visit our website, will.illinois.edu.